A podcast network.
Hello!
Welcome to...
Two...
Filthy...
Nerds!
Because we're filthy...
And we're nerds...
And there's two of us...
Miraculously, both of us survived... To the end of the year. We've made it through 2020.
Have we survived? Hello? I mean, is it are we? Is this a survival? What's going on here?
I mean, yeah, it's... Yeah, that's...
We're both wearing black.
Literally all we've done is survive. Lived? No. But we're shells of our former selves. Still here. Still, I mean, arguably we're both just turning into Voldemort. Of our own accord. Several bathroom appliances have become my own horcruxes. I've just put pieces of my soul through turds.
I now know what a horcrux is.
Me too, because it's such a fun little thing. And that's what we're getting into this episode. Because I've wanted to be like, boo, you horcrux, for a long time. And it had no context. And now it kind of does.
Now I know what you're talking about. Wait, I have a question.
Now, Will, if you're listening
to
this...
No, I'll ask the Horcrux question later. I was going to ask the Horcrux question.
If anyone is listening to this in lieu of watching the movies or reading the books, we will explain what a Horcrux is later. But you really, if anyone is doing that, you really shouldn't. You should read the books.
Yeah, and, read the books.
Or watch. Don't use us as a... Imagine if this is someone's only source of the Harry Potter franchise. They just think there's cum everywhere. Like, what is that?
They watch the movie and they're like, wait, this isn't a porn? That's crazy.
Well, before we dig further into our chapters, it's the end of the year. This is our last episode.
This is our last running of our mouths.
Yeah. For 2020, before our year comes to a close. And I don't know, let's talk about, I don't know if we want to go too deep into the year, but, you know, year end, reflecting back.
Do you remember? Let's start with January and February. How much hope I had for the year ahead.
Oh.
I was feeling good. I was like, you know what? This year's going to be good. This year's going to be great.
Yeah. I was first weekend of the year headlining a club, which I think was my first time headlining, having a weekend, the very first weekend where I was headlining. Mm-hmm. I've headlined before, but like that weekend has either been I'm featuring or I just am not booked at a club that week. Maybe a week or two later, got a phone call from Nicole going, oh my God. Oh my God. And I was like, I know, Pier 1 is having a sale. It's crazy. Because I texted her, I passed a Pier 1 Imports and I was like, Pier 1 Imports is going out of business. And she called me and she's like, oh my God. I was like, I know, isn't it crazy? And she's like, no, Joe Rogan posted your tweet on his Instagram. And that was a week before I was leaving to tour Europe. I was like, this is it. This is going to be the best year of my career.
Nothing kicks off a year like a Joe Rogan wreck.
Yeah. If any of you, by the way, have come to this podcast or are following me because he posts that tweet and you're still here, God bless you. Because they dropped like flies. I got a lot of follows and they slipped off quickly when they were
they
like...
They are not loyal followers.
No.
They are not.
They're like,
they are loyal to Joe Rogan and that's it.
Good for him. And I was honored to be... have his light shone upon me briefly.
And for those of you guys who don't know who Joe Rogan is, head over and give that guy a follow. He needs it.
He needs it. I love him and I'm sad that he's in Austin and I hope all his talk of opening a club becomes reality. And I hope that
I
he
hope
hasn't
we,
forgotten.
We then moved to Austin.
He hasn't forgotten me by then. Yeah. I mean, how are you feeling? January 2020. Go back. What's going on for Nicole?
I feel like January 2020, I found out I was doing Lights Out with David Spade.
Huge.
And I was like, this is huge. This is
you
great.
Finally
this is fantastic.
Get featured on a Comedy Central panel show. That's big. Yeah.
And I do well and it was good. And you know, the booker for that show was like, all right, totally gonna have you back. Everybody loved you. You did a great job. So I was like, all right, cool. You know, this is great.
Rotation.
And then I booked this week at the Comedy Cellar. This week at the Cellar, another Comedy Central show. I got a date for that.
Yeah, you were. And here's what people on the outside, I think, don't understand, if I may. And if you decide you want me to cut this.
No.
For your own sanctity and career. Please do. Comedy Central has a rotation of comedians. And they like to, once they like someone, they see them, they start putting them in different things. And yeah. Comedy Central does not cover every comedian that's coming up in the world. There's plenty of amazing comedians I know that you will have never seen on Comedy Central. But once you're on their radar, that's a very good thing. They start to like plug you into little things and they'll use you more and more. You have more of a voice over there, from my understanding, from, you know, a lot of my friends who work over there.
And also from what you see, like if you look at, you know, the social media for Comedy Central, you'll notice a trend.
Yeah.
You'll see some repeat offenders, you know.
Yeah. And so this was great for you. That's a great place to be getting in with. That's two Comedy Central shows.
I had to join SAG, which was great. I've lived in LA for an extremely long time, and I joined SAG this year. They took all my money.
That's fucking hell. By the way, if anyone doesn't know, that is the Actors Union. That is a big deal for an actor to hit the point that, like, oh, you're booking enough work, you've booked enough small parts, you have to join this union. But as you said, it's a
lot of money to join the union, and I still haven't finished paying off my dues for SAG. I still owe them $1,000, which they told me I have to pay by January 4th or they'll kick me out of the union.
Did you tell them to eat your ass? Didn't they stop giving people health insurance? I would mail them a hot turd. I'm not SAG, by the way. If anyone's wondering, I probably never will be because of that exact attitude.
I have to call them tomorrow and fight with them again. So those were like two big things. And then I had a weekend with Attell in February, and God only knows he's the greatest man alive. In January I had a week at the Comedy Cellar in Vegas, and then I had another week at the Comedy Cellar in March, right before quarantine, right before COVID hit the fan.
They were working you a lot. That's great.
Yeah, they were working me a lot. So I was like, oh, this is great. Like that year I made all of my money but I was able to completely support myself doing stand-up comedy.
That year? That's it. What do you mean? The year before?
2019.
So you were like, it's done. I'm never going back.
I'm never going back. I was like, oh, this is the beginning of it. I'm never going to have another side hustle. I'm never going to, none of that.
Yeah.
And then.
Let me tell you, as someone who's been making all their money from doing stand-up for the last 4 years, it hurts. When the Comedy Store closed down, I was like, I have no purpose.
Yeah, I think was the hardest thing. More than anything, more than losing the income, losing the purpose and the identity. And by the way, we both watched Soul last night. If you haven't watched that movie, my God, you guys, go fucking watch it.
If you just lost someone, take your time and you grieve before you watch that movie. But yes. I think I know what you're going to say.
But the part about the identity, your job is not who you are.
Oh.
Your job is not your spark. That's what hit me real hard, in addition to the whole death thing.
That's so funny because I see what you're saying, that like the spark doesn't come from the thing you do, but also the part where they're in the zone.
Oh, in the zone.
Like these people are in the
1,000%.
Zone.
Yeah, yeah.
When that came on, that was the first time I cried in that movie.
Yeah, oh. When I saw The Zone, I was in shock.
Because I was like, that's it. That's the thing on stage when you're like fully connected and it feels like you're doing like an emotional symphony with the audience and you're not like thinking about your material. You're not thinking about your, what is the act out? You're just organically.
Happening.
You're like,
you're
fully
on autopilot.
Present. Fully present.
That is a magical, magical fucking moment. And when they physicalized what being in the zone looked like, I was like, yes.
And then I was like, I may never be in the zone again.
And I thought the same exact thing. And it fucked me up. Not only did the lack of zone fuck me up, but the whole idea that your spark is not what you do, I was like, oh, fuck.
What was his spark? I still don't understand then. I'm still confused by this movie. I think I was too caught up in crying about death.
His spark.
I missed some. I mean, I remember the leaf. There, a leaf falls down. And he's like, it's not about the music. It's about living every moment. I mean, I remember having the thought of, oh my God, it's not a new thought, but like being the meaning of life is living.
Yeah. I think there was a message for me of being of service.
Well, okay. We've obviously lamented on all the shitty things. Is there anything this year that you can find a silver lining for or gratitude?
That's a tough one. I mean, this year's been pretty brutal. Silver lining, I got to live with you.
That was fun. That was good. Thank God. All of my other things fell apart. And your previous
we were able to get
in with a guy very quickly.
Got dicked up and dicked out. but you moved in and we were able to like really fucking work on this podcast and make it something amazing. And dear God, if I didn't have you, this podcast, Harry Potter,
this has been my spotlight.
Yeah, it has given me something to look forward to. It has given me a sense of purpose. It has given me something to use to escape the reality of the
I love it. And world in a time where, you know, because if we weren't living together, we still would not have seen each other in person. And like,
no.
Even though it's not in person, I also love that we, you know, having had that, we have this community of our patrons, patreon.com/twofilthynerds. Not to be that person.
But if you want to be part of the live
stream and chat along with us, it really has been like a light in the dark that it's like, yeah. Oh, something, first of all, Mama loves to measure her self-worth on productivity, and a lot of people will tell you that's not healthy, and they're right. But having things to do, let me be clear. I am cripplingly aware that my mental health is in the toilet, but it is far better than it would be because I have had this podcast to look
yes.
forward to and had like the escapism and the excitement of one of my favorite stories, just like the laughs we can have. Yeah, no, we did not intend for this Running Our Filthy Mouths to turn into like a corny, now let's talk about how grateful we are for our listeners.
I mean, it really is amazing. We've gotten to know people on this level that would we have otherwise? Fuck, I don't know.
No, and it's like, you know, the thing is, are there other things we wish we could have done this year? 1,000,000,000%.
Yes.
Are there things we wish would have gone differently? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So differently.
Where do we start?
Yeah. We don't have time. Literally, our producer is flagging us down to wrap the fuck up. But like,
but before we wrap up, I want to know, is there any other silver lining for you?
For me? Let's see. Silver lining. You know? Sure. If a global pandemic hadn't happened, I would be thinner. Absolutely. And yeah, maybe I wouldn't wash my hands as well. So that's a silver lining. You know what? This is dark, but as many of you know, both of our dads passed away. And as some of you might know, I was not close with my dad for the last several years. He, you know, left and came back and left, and I haven't talked to him since 2009. Blah, blah, blah. You know, that's my other podcast. If you want, I'll do a whole episode about it. But like, I got the call that he was not doing well from my cousin Tess. And I think in any other year, I wouldn't have been sitting at home with nowhere to be. And ooh, this is about to get sad. Ooh, no, I'm not gonna cry.
Cry, I'm gonna cry.
This is hard. I am a workaholic to a fault. Oh no. I think that, Jesus Christ. Oh, I cannot wait to read the comments of the Comedy Store. People being like, look at this fucking sad bitch. That combined with all of the anger I had about how things were with my dad, I don't think I would have gone to see him in any other scenario. And having done that, having like lived through that experience, I'm so glad that I did. I know after being there and like getting a little bit of closure with him and being by his side when he, you know, left to the great beyond, I wouldn't have wanted to miss that. So, as sad as it is, the whole, you know, obviously the whole history, losing a parent is terrible. But in a year where a lot of people lost people and they weren't able to, you know, I mean, like you look at COVID and there were hospitals where people weren't allowed to go see their loved ones and their loved ones that had to, you know, die alone. It worked out in a way that I'm glad I got to be there. I'm glad I made it in time to get closure. And I'll be grateful when I can think of my dad and not immediately burst into tears. But anyway, check out Ignorance is Blessed for the full I'm unrolling toilet paper for anyone who's only listening to the audio. It got really ugly over here. But yeah, that would be my only other silver lining. My mom moved back to the States. That's fun. Her place is great. It's out in the middle of nowhere. That's a fun getaway, except for, you know, I have to put up with my mom. But the sky is beautiful out there. Plus, I commented on how great it was, and she said I could have it when she dies. So, come on, COVID. I'm kidding. Anyway, before we wrap up and go to break,
just want you to know that was, I'm honored that
thanks Sharon, my therapist, who took all of the Christmas season off, which feels like a bold move for a therapist. But
she's like, the time people probably need me the most, I need to be there for myself.
Yeah, this is and I think we can all learn something from Sharon, and it's okay to shut down and tell people you just don't fucking have room right now. You have to mourn your own losses.
Yeah, I mean, this time of year is good for no one.
No, it's a lot. But okay, before we go to break, I don't want to rush this, but we're rushing it. What are you looking forward to in 2021 or looking forward to leaving behind? What is the energy you hope to bring in for this new, even though that's all, it's a date, who cares? It's just another day, but whatever.
I live life to the fullest. Live life to the fullest.
While staying home and covering your face.
As much as you can. You know, find new creative outlets. Apparently find a new source of income.
Find joy in everything you do.
Yeah, just kind of let love in, you know?
Yeah, also, yeah.
And give it away. Let love in and then give it away.
Yeah. And I think we're all having to find some new income sources until stand-up's back to normal. And here's how I'm feeling about that is just try to enjoy the process of whatever that means. Like, yeah, did I set
what about you?
To be a full-time copywriter? Absolutely not.
Did you get the job?
No.
What are you looking forward to?
I haven't had my interview, to be fair, but my second interview. You know, I'm looking forward to, letting love in, leaning into the things that bring me joy, and also not being, I'm going to do more exploration of the non-comedy things that
agreed,
piqued my interest. I took a full course in cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm learning about neuro-linguistic programming, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe Maybe there's something there. I don't know. Maybe there's... Yeah. Am I going to go to school and get a degree? No. I'm poor and far too frazzled. But I don't know.
Am I going to become a professional painter? Absolutely.
I wish I had your confidence. All right. to more confidence. I hope we all have Nicole's confidence in her painting in the things that we do.
By the way, when you get home and you see all the paintings, you're going to be like, why do you have the confidence that you have? It's fucking
insane.
I've seen
your Instagram stories. All right, we're taking a break. Nicole's going to punch me in this one. We'll be right back.
Bye.
All right, we're back. Chapter 22, After the Burial. When we last left off, we saw Tonks allegedly looking for Dumbledore up by the 7th floor. Moaning Myrtle had been like, there's a boy crying in the bathroom. Anyway, we're back.
We're back. And
someone delivers a letter to Harry. He's thinking it's a Dumbledore meeting time, but he's like, he's not back yet. It makes no sense.
Alas, it's not.
It is a letter from our dear friend Hagrid.
I love how they're like, it's a tear-stained letter. I'm like, how emo is Hagrid that he's like writing a letter? Do you think he intentionally cried on it and just like shook his tears off on it? He was like, this will give the effect.
No, you psychopath. What is wrong with you?
I don't know.
No, he was a real man feeling feelings.
Oh my God.
Lunatic. If you ever send me something tear-stained, I'm going to be like, that conniving fucking
that manipulative
bitch.
Sociopath.
No, I think Hagrid was trying to write it. He started bawling. Hagrid's a sensitive guy. We've seen him cry before.
Yeah. He's emo. He's emo.
A big old bitch.
And he cried on the letter. By the way, I can't. I hope they show this in the movie. Oh, just God. Hagrid weeping on a letter.
Aragog. Aragog died. You guys, big upset for literally only Hagrid. Aragog is dead.
And Hagrid's like, you guys, can you come help me bury my friend? And it's like, no, you psycho. None of us care about your dumb spider.
Yeah, also that, like, he knows everything that's going on, but he's so overcome with grief that he can't think about the fact that, like, that is against the rules. It's extremely dangerous.
Yeah, he's like, put on your cloak. Come on down.
Yeah, and, like, he's like, you've got the invisibility cloak. And it's like, sorry, aren't you a teacher?
These are moments where I'm like, Hagrid kind of sucks sometimes.
I mean, I think really it's a reflection of what grief does to us. You know?
Truly.
Hagrid, who would never want to upset Dumbledore, who loves his position in the school, is now asking three students who are arguably the most in danger. Harry, you know, because he's Harry. The other two, because they are close to Harry, they could become props in a... whatever, in a attempt to, you know, get Harry over to the dark side. I don't fucking know. But, like, he's so distraught about his spider that he's just, like, in so much pain.
That he sends a literal cry for help.
Yes.
Just special delivery, my tears. How big do you think his tears are?
Oh, they would wipe me out.
Like loads, like just hot, back to the hot loads.
Hot loads, just a warm, it would be like a full shower.
A full
shower.
I feel
like he could cry into a hot tub and it would be filled. Mm-hmm. Just like one little tear, like bling.
A tear koozie. The saddest jacuzzi ever. You know, all jacuzzis are sad if you're crying in them.
Yeah. Or if you've, I don't know.
I love a good cry in a jacuzzi. That is like the most elitist thing somebody could possibly say. My favorite place to cry in the jacuzzi.
It just surrounds me with the warmth when I'm feeling so alone. And then you just look at their jacuzzi and it's filled with snot. And you're like, ugh.
But it's like cesspool. How often, if you can say your favorite place to cry in a jacuzzi, is either you cry a lot or you have too many jacuzzis in your life.
I mean, it's probably both.
Yeah, it's probably
how many jacuzzis is too many jacuzzis?
Nothing more annoying than rich people who cry a lot.
Oh, God, rich people problems. Oof. Woof. Which we'll talk about very soon, because we will encounter a rich person crying very quickly in this episode.
Very quickly.
So Ron and Hermione, everyone's kind of on the fence, like, I don't think this is a good idea. Ron and Hermione have not taken their apparition test.
Harry's not, because he's not 17.
So he's SOL. Obviously, Ron's, like, super nervous about it, because he's been fucking up left and right. But this is a potential opportunity for Harry, because Slughorn, they have potions class when everyone's taking the apparition test, and only three of them are there, so it's kind of just, like, more time for, you know, one-on-one
to get in there to try and figure out what that rest of that memory is.
Yeah, and this was cool. They get, like, since there's only three of them, Slughorn's like, let's have fun, which I thought this was fun. He's like, just make a fun potion. Make me
I remember, keep going.
No, go. You remember.
It was like this in high school on SATs. Like when some people you were in a class and some people were taking SATs and some people weren't. And the teacher was like, let's get crazy today because half of the class isn't here.
Whoa, I thought I took SATs on the weekend. Yeah. I think I did. Damn. We didn't get no breaks. I mean, our classes were much dumber in general, I'm sure, than the school you went to, but yeah, this felt like substitute movie day, but like times 10. And I like the idea that Harry had of like, he finds a potion that makes you feel euphoric. So he's like, oh, okay, I'll just give Slughorn Molly. And then he'll be so excited to tell me the memory. Like, that's what he's doing. Like, you are trying to drug your teacher.
And it's really nice to have a change of pace of a student drugging a teacher instead of a teacher teachers drugging students, or are they just...
They're just coercing them with their beautiful bodies. No, they just use their power and influence. Imagine thinking that your like history teacher has power and influence. You're like, oh yeah, Mr. Smith.
Like, who was your history teacher? Mr. Corwin, that was my history teacher.
Mine was Miss Benson. She was nice, but she made us do a lot of reenactments, and I was like, okay, I think we understand the Constitution enough. Like, if we had done a few less forefather reenactments and maybe a little more like Black history, I would have come out a more well-rounded person.
I mean, you were in high school in Alaska. Black history isn't like a big ticket lesson up there.
No, they're like, well, we didn't do it. We weren't even a state. When there were slaves.
No involvement. Okay.
We were up here oppressing the natives.
Rid of Inuits.
Yeah. For 2 cents an acre. That's what Alaska was purchased for, in case anyone doesn't know. 2 cents an acre from the Russians.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
It's so funny that it doesn't impress me because it's such a repeated fact up there. And it's like, yeah, who cares? But no, it's what a steal. Speaking
of
steals.
Who did they buy it from? Like, who got the check?
Russia. To Russia. I don't know.
Russia with love.
But also, did Russia own it, or was Russia like, oh, hey, we own that, so you got to pay us if you want
to
own it.
They're like, we can see it from here. So, I don't understand. You know what? The logistics of Alaska, I'll never totally understand it.
It's gigantic.
Why didn't Canada get it? Why didn't Canada want it?
Well, if you've been to Alaska and met Alaskans, you would know. Okay. They're like, you know what? We're good. We could stop at the Yukon. We've had enough. Because we're an interesting breed.
You are an interesting breed. I don't think you're representative of usual Alaskans. I got to be honest.
I love
you seem a little unhinged.
I am the most hinged person to ever come out of Alaska.
Oh, okay. So Harry goes back to the common room and he discovers Hermione, of course, passed her apparition test. And Ron did not because he left an eyebrow behind.
Yeah, he almost got away with it. Fucking, that sucks. That's like you almost passed your driver's test and then you pull in and you like hit the little curb thing or something. And they're like, nope.
Negatory. By the way, I love that that's how serious the apparition test is you've got to get it 100% or you don't pass, period.
Absolutely. And by the way, in case we weren't clear, Harry made a great batch of Molly. Slughorn did not try it. He was not interested. He's like, Professor, don't you want to try my potion? And he just skedoodled out.
Yeah, Slughorn every day after class with Harry is like, I got to beat feet before this guy tries to get into my pants.
He's probably getting the most exercise he's ever gotten. His cardio.
Ever.
Just like shuffling.
It sounds like he's a real fucking, I mean, Slughorn. Foghorn Slughorn.
I said, I have another class to get to. I gotta get
I'll say, no memories, boy.
No memories, boy. So they're all trying to strategize, like, what the fuck do I do? That didn't work. I'm, you know, we need to get this shit done. Hermione's trying to, like, come up with ideas. And Ron, actually, by the way, Nicole, I just want you to let that sink in.
I was shooketh. Had the best idea.
Yeah. Why don't you drink Felix Felices?
Honesty, go ahead. I don't think he would have thought of that if had Harry not tried it on him. But keep going.
Well, that was what's so funny to me. And you're like, I mean, you're so confident when you take it. It's nothing can go wrong. And they're like, Ron, you didn't take it. And he's like, well, I thought I did. And that's the same thing. Which it is honestly social commentary on the placebo effect and the fact that Pfizer's trying to poison all of us with these never mind. I'm not going to get in a rant about antidepressants. Okay.
This was interesting to me. So Harry drinks the potion.
Yes. He's like,
let's do it. And I didn't realize that this is how the potion worked. I didn't realize that he would drink the potion and be like, aha.
Me neither. That was cool.
I know what to do.
That you have like intuition about like what will be the right thing to do. Because he gets this idea of like, you know what? I really need to go to Hagrid's. I can just, something's telling me that's the place to be.
And he's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. And of course, Ron and Hermione are like, no, that's not. Yeah. What are you doing? He runs into Slughorn. You're right. Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, no. Well, runs into Slughorn. And at that point, he's like, hey, I'm going to go bury Aragog.
This giant spider.
And then Slughorn realizes that Aragog's venom is worth just a truckload of galleons.
Like, he's like, this, it's probably still good if he just died. Like, he gets
full
dollar signs in his eyes. This greedy fuck.
This is what I don't know how to feel about Slughorn. Is he a bad guy? In this moment, I'm like, oh, he's a scumbag. But then in other moments, I'm like, or is he just like an opportunist? Like, is he just a guy who like wants money and fame real bad? I guess that makes you a horrible person.
Yeah, it does make you a horrible person, Nicole.
Okay.
To want money or fame.
Well...
I think he's, you know, he's not the best guy, but I think this is a reflection of a human that like we, you know, everyone's multifaceted. Someone can have good intentions, but still be like drawn to sinful things. He's obviously a glutton. We've seen the way he drinks. Mm-hmm. He is greedy. He's like not get a huge salary here. So he's like, man, I could tag along. And Harry is now seeing like, oh, this is why
this is my opportunity.
He's like, sure. I'm sure that would be great.
Hagrid's thrilled that he has an audience for this funeral.
Yeah, he's like so grateful Harry's there, but then Slughorn coming, he's like, wow, this is so nice of you. Like, you really didn't have to do this. And Slughorn's, of course, fucking leaning into it, like, oh, I revere these creatures. I had to come. And, you know, he sneaks vials of the venom, just like boop boop boop. And
here's a fucked up part of this whole scene. Slughorn and Hagrid start.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Boozin'.
Yeah, Slughorn bought a bunch of booze. By the way, he's like, I had a house elf taste all of them to make sure they're safe because of what happened to your friend Ron. It's like, oh my God. You could have killed a house elf.
Expendable. Hermione doth protest.
Yes.
But I love that Harry's thought is, I gotta stay sober for this one. He's not even 17.
But he's being offered. It's just one of those things when, like,
why is drinking so normal in this world?
In the UK? Is that what you're asking? Have you been there? Have you ever been English town when there's a soccer match and there people are just barfing in the streets and they're like, man,
Sorry. Have you seen that?
No, but
I've imagined.
Have you seen
people barfing in the street yet?
I haven't been to Ireland yet, but I hear it's fabulous this time of year.
Anyway, so here he pretends to drink. I'm going to stay sober so I can have the upper hand. I mean, that's his thought.
But that's the Felix Felicis is like, don't drink. And he's like, oh, don't drink. Got it. Also that he thought that he needed the Felix Felicis to be like, maybe don't get sloshed while you're trying to get this memory.
Yeah. I wouldn't have any. My judgment would be completely impaired otherwise.
Yeah. Well, that it's like, yeah, he's clearly a teenager that someone had to tell him that, like a special potion. But they become trashed. Everyone's in a good mood. Hagrid passes out. And that's
Harry
when,
slides in with the question.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, man, like, what's up with that memory? Come on. And Slughorn's on this whole, like, your eyes, they're like your mother's. And
how good were his mother's eyes?
Apparently they were great because everyone remembers them so clearly. They must have been piercing. Like, I don't remember very many people's eyes.
Unless they're piercing.
Yes, and then they cut to my core. So Slughorn's like, I don't know.
Like, dude, I need this so fucking bad. He's like, I need this, otherwise I can't fight Voldibuns.
Yeah, they have this whole connection about, like, Voldemort killed my mother, and, you know, wouldn't you want to, like, do right by my mother? She was one of your favorite students. And so Slughorn finally gives in, but he says, he's like, please, you know, don't think too little of me when you see this memory. He's obviously like, and it's, I think what we suspected, or what I suspect would have suspected, is, like, he's ashamed of the fact that he just gave away some type of important information.
Yeah.
And that's when we're rolling to the next chapter. Slughorn drunkenly takes out the memory like we've seen Snape and Dumbledore do. The little silver shit comes out of his head. He puts it in a vial for Harry. And the best part is, because of the Felix Felices, he is so drunk, he's not even going to remember doing this. So it doesn't have to be weird at all. This isn't like a regular one night stand where you run into the person in the grocery store and you're like, oh, that's you. You came in my hair. No. No one has to know. All right. We roll into chapter 23.
How many times, real quick, how many times have you had cum in your hair?
That I'm aware of? Two. I would say that's probably a very low bar, though. I mean, this hair? You think there's that? I mean, there could be something living in it now.
Yeah. I'll be honest. We recorded an episode a few weeks ago and I had a load in my hair.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
You had a load in your hair?
Mm-hmm. I was just sitting next to you right at the comedy store. Just a fucking when I whooped up into the bun. Actually, my hair was down. I had my hair down with a load in it. All right, let's go on.
You guys stay inside. Don't let people load in your hair. That could be carrying something.
So Harry runs back to the castle.
Yeah. Oh, chapter 23, Horcruxes.
Chapter 23, Horcruxes. Yes. So he gets back to the castle. The potion's wearing off. He tries to get into the fat lady.
And she's like, I changed the password. Like, just because she, what a bitch.
Like, what the fuck is wrong with her?
That she's.
And by the way, she was lying.
Yeah, she was lying because she was just mad he woke her up. She's like, you'll just have to sleep out here. And he's like, well, what am I going to do? And then Nearly Headless Nick is like, oh, Dumbledore's back. He mentions that. Because she's like, you'll have to take it up with the headmaster. And then he's like, I will. And the fat lady's like, I was just kidding. Like, oh, no, I'm going to be fired.
She's like, it's the same.
What is happens if a portrait gets fired from being a door hole? Do they just, like,
I feel
put
like
it on a different wall?
Gets,
or
yeah,
do you just...
it gets moved.
You just get sold on eBay?
Oh, what would it be for witches and wizards? Spell bay?
Spell bay? I don't know. I wish my brain could think of something better than that. But what?
What?
Akioverstock.com. Oh, that's funny. Like Osseo. Uh-huh. Akio. Is it Akio or Osseo? That's our producer, Sam, coming in hot. Osseoverstock.com. Aussie over here. It doesn't matter. The point is, you guys get it. Don't fuck around.
Anywho, so Harry takes off.
Yeah, and I love that the ghost had been like, oh yeah, he was seen coming in. He looked like he was in a pretty good mood, but a little tired. So something's going on with Dumbledore. Either something good happened, or is he like all-knowing Dumbledore, and he's like, I think we're getting the information we need. Still not sure, but.
I mean, I put my money on the all-knowing Dumbledore.
Yeah. So
it's his whole vibe. He's just a know-it-all.
He really is. Thank God. So this is where shit gets really fun. Harry gets to his office and he's like, you know what? What's going on? Why are you here so late? And he tells him he got the memory. And obviously he's thrilled and there's no time to waste.
By the way, I love that Dumbledore at no point is like, you shouldn't be roaming the hallways, Harry. He's just like, all right, cool, let's do this.
No.
Harry never gets in trouble with Dumbledore ever.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you're the chosen one. That like, sorry, yeah, the chosen one gets a little bit of leeway, you guys. He was chosen. He's the only Jewish kid in school.
I would love if Harry was a Jew.
Harry Potterwitz.
Our people would love to have him as one of our people.
Oh my God, yeah. All that gold? Okay. don't cancel me, other Jews.
Who do you think was running the vault?
I mean, somebody got mad about that somewhere.
I know.
I saw a person be like, how dare she also make goblins run the bank? What are you inferring? And it's like, no, you're the one that's inferring.
Yeah, yeah.
By seeing goblins and thinking of Jews. Like what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're the bad one.
You anti-Semite. And again, it goes back to my theory that everyone's anti-Semitic. Anywho, so they
put
toss his memory into the pensive.
Dive in
like the huge.
They're back at that scene that they saw before in the messed up memory. Slughorn's holding court over the same gathering of students. We see Voldemort. You know, all the other students are revering, or like they're just revering. Paul Revere. Everyone, and they even notice it. Harry even notices that there's some kids older, but they still seem to look like him. And the first thing I noticed different was when everyone was in there, and Slughorn talks about, oh, you're going to be so great. I wouldn't be surprised if you're in the ministry within 20 years, 15, if you keep bringing me these pineapple things, which if you remember the original memory, it just goes foggy. And he's like, you'll go wrong, boy. Mark my words. Which is like, that's what you did to cover it up. You just.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah. It was like they were all, you know, laughing and stuff. And then apropos of nothing.
Modified it.
Apropos of nothing. Slughorn's like, you'll go, as if he's like, I knew all along. I would never have given him information. But. So everyone leaves. Voldemort's, loitering around.
And Voldemort sticks around and he's like, hey, what's a Horcrux?
Yeah, very innocent, though. Very, like, charming. I love how it's written that Harry notices. He's like, oh, I can see what it looks like when someone's trying to get information and pretend it's not a big deal because I've had to be that person. And, you know, he asks, he's like, oh, it's just a thing I came across. I was just curious. Like, could you tell me what a Horcrux is? A Horcrux is, of course, an object in which a person has concealed part of their soul. So that's what we learn. And Voldemort's very interested in this. He's like, very curious about how it's made, but playing it very like, I mean, I just figure like if anyone knew, you would know. That's kind of crazy, right? Like, yeah.
I feel like it's also this element of like flattery that Voldemort understands how to manipulate. Like, oh, you know, you're so all knowing, and like knowing that that's one of, I feel like a weakness of Slughorn's, as he just loves acknowledgement and like, oh, I'm so smart, I know these things.
Oh yeah, I mean, his need for people to love him and to be in the mix is such a weakness.
Same as me.
It's, I mean, in this instance, it's like, oh, that is how you manipulate the person, just to go, I mean, you're so talented. And so I would love to know how to.
I would love to know just this little simple thing, because, I mean, it's really not so simple, but it's probably simple to you because you're so smart.
So he's like, you know, how is one made? And Slughorn kind of explains it, that you have to split your soul and you hide part of it in an object. Outside of your body, then even if your body's attacked and destroyed, you can't die because part of your soul is in this Horcrux. And Slughorn tells him, you know, like, to split your soul, you have to do something very dark, very evil. You have to kill someone. Like, you have, like, that's how someone splits their soul. And Voldemort is, like, getting real twinkly-eyed.
Yeah, he's like, oh, really, my God, you're telling me I get to do what I already do?
I don't know if he and was, oh, I guess he had already killed people at that point. He's got the ring on.
Yeah.
So he's like, I mean, arguably, he's like, oh, good, I already have one ready to go in the bag.
Yeah. I'm in a Horcrux right now.
Yeah. He gets real weird. He starts asking, like, but, like, would be someone be even more powerful if, like, they split their soul into more parts? Like, I don't know, like.
I mean, this was a moment where I was like, wow, Voldemort really is fucking brilliant.
I mean,
like,
in an
he's
evil
no
way.
Dumb.
No.
Yeah, in an evil way. He is. It's terrifying what a what a strong, not strong, what's the word I'm looking for to think of that? You know, it's like if you're given the explanation of like, you just split your soul. And then he's like, but what if you do it again?
I mean, yeah, that he's just, I mean, it's a very intelligent leap of thought, but I think he's probably already been having that thought. Or I guess maybe that did just occur to him, but he goes like, I think he came into this knowing he was going to ask this question. And he goes,
yeah,
what if you split it into like seven pieces? Because apparently seven is the most powerful number in the wizarding world. It carries a lot of magic connotation.
Also my favorite number.
That's your favorite number? It's one of my favorite numbers.
Seven number. Seven and 11. Mainly because I love 7-11. But yeah, 7 and 11 are my two favorite numbers.
I'm a 5 and 7. Also interesting, 7 years of Hogwarts. So I wonder if that was intentional when they set up the school.
Oh, interesting.
They're like, 7, it's the most powerful number. I don't know. But Slughorn is really freaked out by it. Like, he's like, yeah, didn't you just, but you'd have to kill more people. You wouldn't want to kill, like, more people. He's like, yeah, I guess, like, technically, but that's, this is all theoretical, yeah,
then you're
right?
Then you're a mass murderer.
Yeah, you killed a whole mass of people at a very small Catholic church. Yeah, so it's like he gives him the information, but Slughorn's like, this is just, like, for educational purposes.
This is
right?
Just, yeah, you're just wondering. You're just pure curiosity.
And he's like, and oh, it's of course.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah. So the memory.
Feel like he already knew this. He just needed confirmation.
Yeah, I think he definitely had speculation. He was leaning toward the information already. Like, I don't think he came in completely deaf, like unknowing of what a Horcrux was. But I think this was him going, okay, here's what I believe. Let me ask someone who might know.
Yeah,
if this makes sense. So they come out of it, and this is great because Dumbledore apparently had this theory all along.
Mm-hmm. Of course he did. Of course he did. Dumbledore knows fucking everything. I don't even know why he needed this memory to know that.
I mean, I think he just wanted... It's the same proof? Reason... Well, it's the same reason Voldemort probably went to Slughorn. It's like, yeah, I know, but I want confirmation. It's like, I want to hear someone else say the thing that I'm assuming. And he got to go, okay, so at the very least, he knows what a Horcrux is. And he had the idea, like, what I'm thinking, he has thought too. So it adds up.
Well, I mean, we find out that one of the Horcruxes was Tom Riddle's diary.
Yeah.
And we already know that that's been destroyed. So for me, I'm like, well, why wouldn't Dumbledore just be like, yeah. Well, that's... The thing with Harry Potter, when he tried to make Harry and then it backfired and when... God, I'm losing this. When he Avada Kedavra Harry and then it came back at him and it almost destroyed him, but it didn't destroy him. It didn't destroy him because there was a Horcrux of him that still existed.
Well, he had several Horcruxes.
Oh, no.
No. Yeah, but, no. At that point,
you could
have
gone on the assumption that he had more than one if he didn't die then. Well, actually,
yeah,
you
could
assume
that's why he didn't die. But, like, because at this point, he probably had already made at least the diary Horcrux was probably.
Yeah.
Because we don't.
So do you think he made more Horcruxes after the diary situation?
Well, that's what Dumbledore's theory is that he has seven Horcruxes. Or his soul split into seven parts. Because I think that was the argument of like, so there's seven objects. And he's like, no, it's split into seven parts, which means there's six objects. And then him, he's the seventh part.
Uh-huh.
And they talk about like, Harry's like, does he know? Like, can he feel it when you destroy a Horcrux? And Dumbledore's theory is that no, because he's so split apart and so like dark and evil, he doesn't. He's not doing his yoga. He's not in tune with his body.
Not at all. Escaped. He does not listen to his body. He's not doing a 12-step program. He is not in touch with himself.
No, and we find out Dumbledore says the ring is another one he destroyed. So he talks about, like, he confirms, like, that's what's up with his hand. If Snape hadn't been there to give him the right potions and stuff right away, he probably would have died. And so Harry does the basic math, and he's like, all right, so that means there's four Horcruxes that we have to destroy before we can destroy Voldemort. And then they start speculating, like, what could the Horcruxes be? And I don't know if you jumped to this conclusion before the thing said it. But
yes, I did. I was immediately like, oh, all of those important objects.
The Hufflepuff
cuff, Slytherin locket, whatever the Gryffindor or Ravenclaw objects are. But I did not suspect Nagini. When he brought up Nagini, I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense.
So you assumed, because we saw the Hufflepuff and the locket, you assumed what Dumbledore said is like he probably wanted things of like statures, so he probably would have tried to get a Ravenclaw or Gryffindor.
Because we know he likes trophies, and that makes sense that he would put himself inside important objects. He wouldn't just put himself in something mundane.
Yeah, and it's also who's going to destroy something, and not knowing it's a Horcrux, no one's going to get rid of, you know, these artifacts of... Mm-hmm. You know, Hogwarts house founders. The Nagini the snake thing, I think, comes as a surprise. But even like Dumbledore says, he's like, it's a Gryffindor or Ravenclaw thing. But like, really, the only Gryffindor thing is that sword. So we know that that's out.
Yeah.
And this is. So I don't know. We're kind of doing the initial digging, at least. We find out this is why Dumbledore hasn't been around. He's been out looking for these Horcruxes.
I mean, I just don't totally believe that. I feel like Dumbledore's up to something else.
Maybe.
I don't know what, but like, that's it? Dumbledore was just going out looking for Horcruxes?
I don't know. It's crazy. And I mean, it seems like they're kind of difficult to find, so maybe. And then Harry goes like, you know, next time you go looking for one, to destroy one, I would like to be a part of that. And Dumbledore doesn't even hesitate. He's like, absolutely. I think that's totally fair. And which... I think surprised Harry, but it's like at this point it's like you probably have to be part of destroying them because Voldemort made him who he is by just believing that prophecy. I'm sure there's something to like him needing to be, you know. And it's also like, if the prophecy is true about one of them has to live and the other one dies, it's like, I'm not going to tell you you can't come and try to help get closer to killing the guy that either has to die or you have to die.
The scary thing for me was when he was like, it will take an uncommon skill and power to kill a wizard like Voldemort.
Yeah, he was like, even if we destroy parts of his soul, he still has his magic and his brain, and he's still an extremely, he's a talented guy. He's very powerful.
Terrifying. That was terrifying to me. Because all this time I'm thinking Harry has it. This is going to be an easy kill for Harry because he's
Harry. But even Harry's like, I don't have that. I'm not uncommon. Like, Harry's like thinking about his classes and he's like, I don't exceed expectations in anything except Defense Against the Dark Arts, literally his OWL grade. And then Dumbledore's like, yes, but you have the capacity to love, which Harry tries to be like, yeah, I get it, love. But Dumbledore like really leans into it and talks to him about why love is so powerful and how regardless of if there had been this prophecy, everything that has happened to Harry because he loves things would have still driven him to want to, you know, kill Dumbledore. I mean, I just pulled in Nicole.
Oh,
I'm slipping.
You are slipping.
Shouldn't have cried in the first portion of the show.
And I'm the one with COVID brain. Now you just have my usual brain, which doesn't work.
So anyways... Yeah, Dumbledore basically tells him, like, the prophecy of the Chosen One is only the prophecy because Dumbledore gave it power, which I think this is a nice life lesson for all of us, is that, like, you don't have to give power to every thought that crosses your mind.
Yeah.
Dumbledore did.
You don't have to give power to every thought and every word.
Because Voldemort went after Harry after hearing the prophecy, he created Harry by killing Harry's mom, by killing Harry's family. He made Harry hate him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he, Dumbledore emphasizes that, you know, like, you don't have to believe the prophecy. Even if you didn't, you would still want to defeat him. Like, that's, and Harry realizes that. He's like, prophecy aside, like, you killed my mother. You took Sirius Black away from me. You've made all of this trouble for me. I would, and I thought this analogy was great. Before we go to break really quick. Sorry, I'm rambling all over you, Nicole. Jump in at any point.
It's okay.
But
it's okay.
I like that Harry realizes after this conversation that his journey to killing Voldemort is a choice. That analogy that, like, you can either be dragged into the arena or you can walk confidently. And like, how some people would argue there's not a difference. There's a giant monster in there that's going to kill you. But him having that revelation is like, oh, that's a huge difference. Me going, I am choosing to actively engage in this quest gives you so much more power than you being
the
like
the energy of choice. It's like you're empowering yourself. It's you're not the victim of a circumstance. You're walking into something willingly, and it's going to be hard no matter what. But you, as long as you've made that choice, that gives you power.
Absolutely. And speaking,
that's why men want to take away our choice to do what we want with our body. No, God,
don't forget to donate to Planned Parenthood. If you want to come in,
we're
somebody
Planned Parenthood.
Give money to
I'm
Planned
only talking
Parenthood.
About men in Congress. Okay.
Okay. Our male homosexual producer is making us wrap up on this because vaginas gross him out. Okay. I'm just kidding, but we'll be right back. All right, we're back. Chapter 24. Sectum Sempra.
When I saw the name of this chapter, I was like,
which we already know. We've seen that in the column of his book, Sectum Sempra, Four Enemies. That's all we knew. But what were you thinking really quick? What were you thinking when you saw this title?
I fully forgot that that was the thing. I was like, Sectum Sempra.
Oh, you were just making noises. You're like, some.
Yeah, I was like, that's just some of the words. Very nonsensical. We know this.
Wizarding gobbledygook. Okay, so.
But the opening of this is very thrilling news to me. Mwah. Ron and Lavender break up.
Finally.
And so do Ginny and Dean.
Ron was a coward. Lavender finally pulled the plug. But Ginny and Dean, finally over. They've been.
Katie gets back to Hogwarts.
Doesn't remember a thing.
And everybody's like, "What? Are you sure? Like, what happened?" She's like, "I don't fucking know."
She's like, "I remember going into the bathroom, and then now I'm here."
That's
like, I woke up in St. Mungo's. Final Quidditch match of the year. Everyone's getting excited because there's still a shot. They still have a shot that they can win the cup. It's not a guarantee, but there's time. Harry's continuing to obsess over the Marauders map, looking for Malfoy.
And he sees Malfoy in a bathroom with Moaning Myrtle.
Yeah. So obviously he's like, oh my God.
This confirmed my theory earlier because I thought it would be him in the bathroom.
Crying like a bitch. You did say that
like
in the last
bitch.
Episode. You're like, mm-hmm. I bet it's Malfoy. Speaking of, to circle back when we talked earlier about rich people crying, here we are. So he's like,
poor rich boy who lost his daddy to the dark side.
Yeah. Harry tries to snoop in. He's overhearing them. Malfoy is sobbing and he's like, he says like weird shit. He's like, he told me I had to do it. And if he doesn't, I'm running out of time and it's not working and he's going to kill me. And I
could not decide if he was being manipulative or not. I can't figure out if he's
manipulating Myrtle
Maybe she caught him doing something earlier. I don't know. And then he was just like, and like is like making up this whole lie to her so she doesn't say anything.
But he's continuing to go in there and cry. But maybe it's a big lie that he has to like, keep covering.
I don't know how I feel about this.
Harry, he sees Harry in the mirror. There's a lot of back and forth jinx. And then Harry remembers the spell that he read in the Half-Blood Prince for enemies. And he goes, Sectum Sempra. But before we get into this, this was right milliseconds after Malfoy had tried to do the Cruciatus curse on him. So,
yeah,
lest we think Malfoy is an innocent party here. He tried an unforgivable curse, didn't work, and then Sectum Sempra, holy shit, it covers him in slashes. Like, he's bleeding everywhere.
I lived for this.
It's like ripped him apart.
It was so good. Oh, you that little fuck boy.
There's blood everywhere. Myrtle is screaming.
You know what? I prefer Myrtle screaming instead of crying. Honestly, it's a nice change of pace for Myrtle.
Little mix up. That's true. But it's just going to cause more crying in the long run because it's residual trauma of her possible lover boy. We don't know what she thinks of Malfoy at this point. Just that she feels
I think she just likes bad boys. You know, she sees Harry as a bad boy. She sees
this
Malfoy
guy crying
like
as a bad boy.
Yeah, but you know, it's like he's in bed with the devil.
I mean, that's true.
Does she know that, though?
Does she know
who this person is?
We don't know who he really is. Like, we know who he pretends to be. How deep in bed is he with, quote, the devil?
Yeah.
How much is him just trying to seem cool? It's still a little unclear. Of course, as luck would have it, the fucking
Snape.
First person to show up is
Every fucking time. Snape shows up and he's like, Harry, you stay here. I'm taking Malfoy to the infirmary. Takes him to the infirmary, comes back. We learn Harry has used a little bit of dark magic. The Sectumsempra.
I think that was very obvious, but like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Slashing somebody, not light magic.
But Snape's like, how did you learn a spell like that? And Harry's like, oh, I read it in a book somewhere. I don't remember. It was in the library. And he's like, bring me all your school books. So I don't know if he's thinking.
Shit gonna hit the fan.
Maybe this library book is in Harry's bag and there's no time for him to get rid of it. Maybe he has notes written in a, who knows? But he's like, I want to see all your school books. Which, as we know.
He swaps books, very, very smart, swaps books with Ron. And he brings that book to Snape. And Snape's like, this isn't your book. I don't believe this.
Yeah, he's like, this is your book. Which is like weird.
I don't know why he wouldn't think it was his book.
I don't know. Well, because there's also, it alludes to occlumency in the book.
Yeah.
Harry's like, oh no, he's going to try to read my brain, but I can't shut it off. Oh no. And he's like, immediately, of course, the first thing he thinks of is that book. And that's when Snape goes, bring me your books.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he probably just got maybe Harry's brain.
Yeah.
And Snape's like, well, fuck you, detention every Saturday, which means no Quidditch for Harry. He can't make the final match, which sucks. Obviously, no one's happy about that. Ginny has to replace him as Seeker. Dean will be covering for Ginny, which means like he's like, no, they're going to fucking get back together. So
Goes to detention. He's in there.
It sucks.
He can't tell what's happening. He can't tell if they're winning or losing during the Quidditch
game.
By
the way, just to reiterate how serious of a spell this was of Malfoy. We all know that McGonagall is diehard Quidditch. Like, she got him on the team. She's pulled some favors for him. Even McGonagall was like, yeah, no, you deserve the punishment you got. You're lucky that he didn't expel you. And also, Harry, by the way, it's in some point in the course of this, finally got the Room of Requirements to open because he hid his book. He's like, I need somewhere to hide my book.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. And he hid the book in there. Yeah,
he finds, by the way, some like theater-sized room where people have hidden things over the years, which to me is so funny.
I can't remember. Did Harry? Oh, fuck. What was I just going to ask? Fuck, forget it. I can't remember. There was something I wanted to ask you if Harry. Did Harry at any point say to Snape or McGonagall that Malfoy tried using an unforgivable curse?
I don't think he did. He told his friends that. When I read, it sounds like he told Ron and Hermione.
Yeah.
Because Ginny gets a fucking attitude with Hermione, because Hermione's like, well, you shouldn't have been reading that book. And Ginny's like, he tried to do the Cruciatus curse on him. Hermione, lay off.
Yeah. Like, and that to me is like, why didn't Harry say something about that?
I think he was in shock. I think he was like, oh, I thought this would be like the leg thingy where he goes up in the air. I didn't think it would be that bad. And it's interesting, this room, there's a room full of crazy things, other books that people have tried to put away, like weird cursed things like frisbees with fangs and shit. That the vanishing cabinet, they put the one guy in that fucking year and he just got lost. And in detention, Snape has him sorting through all of the files of people getting in trouble. And it's all like ones of like Sirius and his dad. Like, oh, they did a spell on this person. They fucking did that. They did this. Just to be like, now you can see like what a great guy your dad was. Remember that?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That for me is, I think the whole root of every single issue Snape has with Harry is Snape's just he got bullied
and he can't let
so
it go.
Bad and he can't let it go. And it's just like, bro, why didn't you become a stand-up comedian?
Yeah.
You know,
do something
like
with that
with
anger.
Getting bullied that much. Yeah. You belong at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
You absolutely belong at the Comedy Store, drinking too much with Red Band and the crew
in that back bar. And
in
then
the back
like
bar.
Going way too far with a weird like murder rape joke, and people are like, "Why does he do those jokes?"
Yeah,
it's too
much. That's your wheelhouse. And then the chapter ends with
Gryffindor won, so Harry
my favorite
didn't know
moment.
You couldn't hear a thing in the dungeon. He gets back to the Gryffindor common room. He's trying to hear like, are they celebrating? Because usually they're either celebrating or commiserating. Can't hear a fucking thing. Does the password? Door flies open. Woo! Gryffindor.
They won.
They won 400 to something. They won by the amount of points they needed. The Quidditch Cup is there. Ginny comes running over.
And then in front of fucking everyone, Ginny and Ron kiss.
What?
And everybody starts.
Do you hear yourself? Ginny, what is your hang up with this incest? You fucking creep. It's not happening.
It doesn't work.
They're not going to.
I'm sorry.
This isn't your category on you porn.
Listen,
this isn't children's
novel.
I'm an
old woman. I fuck up names. It's my thing.
Harry kisses Ginny and they're locked for what seems like a beautiful eternity. You pervert. Keep your weird redheaded sibling porn out of
here. But they kiss and everybody's like wolf whistling.
They're like, oh,
going
shit.
Fucking bananas. They're like, oh, damn.
Oh, but Dean Thomas, a glass breaks in his hand.
She like breaks a glass in his hand. But the best part is Harry's like scanning the room and he locks eyes with Ron and Ron's just kind of like, well, gotta do what you gotta do, bro. Just kind of like, go for it.
In the most clutch moment where he could have been a dick. I think there's also
that is the only moment so far in this whole fucking book that I have just fallen in love with Ron.
Even when he came up with the Felix Felices, you are insufferable.
This was his best moment. This was his numero uno moment.
Oh, for God's sake. I mean, it's a good moment. Listen, you guys, we got to get out of here. We will be back with more. You're going to get the next three chapters on Saturday.
Find us on Patreon.
Patreon.com/2filthynerds. You will have missed it by the time this chapter comes out, but we're about to do a live reading of chapter 25 through 27. And that's the thing we do. We do movie watches, we do live reads, and you can be in the chat while we're recording live if you join our Patreon, and you get entered for cool grand prize giveaways and other cool stuff coming down the pipeline. Patrons will be the only ones voting on what our next series will be. So get over there, and thank you to everyone following us on social media at Two Filthy Nerds. If you're not already, do that, and please stop what you're doing and go leave a rating and a review and subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time.
Bye.
This has been a Two Filthy Nerds production.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.